Welcome to Pen Voices, a podcast initiative which brings you stories from pen chapters around the world. My name is Mark Isaacs, president of the Sydney Pen Centre and host of Pen Voices. Pen Voices is brought to you by Pen International, a worldwide organisation which defends freedom of expression, campaigns on behalf of writers who have been silenced by persecution or imprisonment, and promotes the written word in all its forms. If you are interested in everything I have just mentioned, please become a member. Go to www.pen.org.au for more details. In today's episode, Sydney Pen President Mark Isaacs interviews former Pen Prisoner of Conscience and Kurdish-Iranian writer Behrouz Bushani and Dr. Omid Tofighian, translator of his book No Friend But the Mountains, Writing from Manus Prison. This was Behrouz's first public speaking event since he escaped from Papua New Guinea. Just 1 week earlier, Behrouz made a secretive journey to New Zealand with the assistance of close friends, Amnesty International and UNHCR. Behrouz was one of hundreds of asylum seekers and refugees who were exiled to Manus Island, Papua New Guinea, for more than 6 years by the Australian government as part of Australia's punitive border control policies. Behrouz has received international praise for his book, which won the Victorian Prize for Literature. His freedom was met with overwhelming emotion by supporters all over the world. This event was recorded by Wollongong Writers Festival. Before we get stuck into talking with Behrouz, I think I'll begin with an acknowledgement of country. I'd like to pay my respects to the Wadi Wadi people of the Dharawal Nation, for they hold the stories, traditions, culture and hopes of Aboriginal Australia. This is, was and always will be Aboriginal land. We meet today to share our stories, and in doing so I honour Aboriginal leaders of the past, present and future, and extend acknowledgement and respect to all First Nations people present. Welcome everyone. And thank you all for coming. This is going to be a very exciting talk. I'm really excited to meet both Omid and Behrouz via Skype, as I'm sure you guys all are too. And I think we were talking, Omid and I, that this could be Behrouz's first public appearance since he escaped from Papua New Guinea. So wait for when Behrouz gets there, yeah? When we get Behrouz, I'm going to get you all to give him a big cheer, okay? So for now, my name's Mark Isaacs. I'm an author, a writer, a researcher and a community worker, and I've been working with people seeking asylum for the past 7 years. There he is. Yoo-hoo! Welcome, Behrouz. Perfect timing. I was just about... before I introduce the man of the hour, I'd also think I should introduce the man on my further to the right of me, Omid Tofighian. He's an assistant professor of English and comparative literature at the American University in Cairo and a lecturer in the School of Arts and Media at UNSW. And he is the translator of Behrouz's book. I'd like to call it their book. I don't know if that's appropriate, but... You guys worked on it together, so...
it's Behrouz's book, and I'm honoured to be a collaborator on it.
Wonderful. And then this is a man that does not need introduction, Behrouz. I don't need to read your bio, because I'm pretty sure everyone here knows where you've been and what you're about, but I will just say that I first met Behrouz in Manus Island prison, and it was in November 2017. I don't know if you remember this, but it was at a time when the Australian government had closed the detention centre, and they were trying to forcibly move the men into these open centres, exploiting this legal loophole after the PNG Supreme Court ruled that the arbitrary detention of refugees was against the PNG constitution. And so the men refused to leave, and ironically, I had to be smuggled into the prison by boat to speak to the men. And Behrouz was one of the first people I met. I met him at midnight by the light of a phone. And he was shirtless and skinny, and he appeared shy and polite, and he was attached to his phone, furiously typing a story for The Guardian. And at the time, it was amazing to think that he could produce such a powerful article, or such powerful articles for international news outlets. on that really small device. I was quite taken by it, and especially in those conditions. But then to imagine that he wrote a book, let alone one as amazing as No Friend But the Mountains, and I'm not just trying to, say too many accolades in front of Beirut just because he's here, but it is truly a wonderful book. And he, on top of that, he also produced the film Chalka, Please Tell Us the Time, while in detention. So he's won multiple awards for No Friend But the Mountains, including the Victorian Prize for Literature. And if you haven't read the book, just leave now, go buy it, read it, and then come back, because it's worth it. And just amazingly, that despite having never set foot in the country of Australia, Beirut has managed to establish himself as one of our greatest contemporary writers and philosophers, and his damning and philosophical and poetic account of Manus is going to be an Australian classic if it isn't already, and will be studied by students all over the world for years to come. So, without further ado, let's get stuck into the conversation. Beirut, the question on everyone's lips is, how did you make it out? Can you talk to us about the escape from Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for your kindness. I think, my journey from Port Coast to New Zealand was so difficult and long journey, but, when I arrived in Auckland, in Christchurch, I thought about a long journey from the beginning. I mean, from the first day that I arrived in Christmas Island, and before that on the ocean, and that time that I have started to work, I smuggled the phone in and I started to, establish a network and, communicate with the world, with the journalists. I was thinking about this, and this last journey is only a part of that, which was so stressful and so hard. But it was like a game for me. Like, it was quite funny for me, this journey that I had from Port Moresby to Christchurch, compared to the long time, struggling in Manus Island, because when I arrived in Christchurch, someone asked me, how is your feeling? And I said, I'm happy that I survived, because I knew and I know that how was dangerous, working in Manus. Anytime I could die because of, sickness, because of this kind of thing, and because of the authorities, I was there and, we were facing a fascist system, and it was easy for them just to pay to a local person. They said, just beat this man, beat him from back, back of head. Who could take responsibility, They said he died, and, definitely he would say something that, he did this, They killed him because he had relationship with the woman in that island. They already say this kind of thing to many people. They say this to, Reza Barati, that he was killed inside the prison camp. The prime minister, who is his name? Scott Morrison. He says that, on that time he was the immigration minister. He said that Reza Barati wanted to have relationship with the woman there, and the local became angry and killed him, So that's why it was so hard, Always I was worried about my safety, and in other side, I was worried, concerned about my health. And that's why, I'm really happy that I survived, It is the big achievement for me that I survived. Second, we can talk about this challenge and, the impact of my works and what I have done and what we did. And, but the first thing is, how I survived. And I'm really happy about that. Another thing I'm happy about it is that I always work as an independent person, and they didn't let you know, others like politicians and you know, it's better I don't talk about, but to take control of me and tell me how should I work. And you know, I always was independent, and also I didn't make a big mistake in my work to damage others, you know, and that's why I am happy. So now I am here.
Was that a danger for you and Ahmed, that you might put other people in danger through your writing?
I mean, damage like this, that sometimes you write something, because most of my work, you know, I was reporting, and so some stories were very sensitive, and that's why, you know, I could make a mistake, you know, to damage the whole, you know, the all of the refugees, and, you know, give this excuse to the government, someone like Peter Dutton, to use it in the media and, you know, attack us, and, you know, I lose my reputation, my credit, and, you know, they use it against the refugees, you know. So that's why I think it was so difficult, so difficult to work in that circumstances, you know, work in that circumstances. And that's why I say, yeah. So I can give you some example, but no, just generally, it was so sensitive. Yeah, sometimes you could say something to interview, and you know, they use it against you. You know, that's why I say.
I think a lot of people may not be aware that there are trolls hounding Behrouz constantly. There are right-wing politicians, shock jocks, journalists waiting for Behrouz to make a mistake, waiting for him to say something that they can misinterpret and manipulate and use against him. So this, I think, is what he's talking about, the fact that he was careful, he was strategic, he was thoughtful, and he was always aware of, he was always respectful in terms of the people he was representing, and trying to be as astute as possible, trying to be as profound as possible, and always understanding that he was challenging the system. It wasn't about any particular individuals. This is a whole system that he was confronting.
And we've talked about it previously, Behrouz, but you were also worried about being targeted for your work by the local PNG authorities and Australian authorities. Can you talk a little bit about the dangers, such as when you were put in prison and in Manus?
Yeah, it was possible that any time they target me, because you know, the Australian government and authorities, they told the local authorities that this man is playing with your reputation. And I didn't play with their reputation, you know. In all of my works, you can see that, you know, always I defend the local people, and still I think about them in the book, and particularly in the movie, you know, actually I introduced them, and, you know, I defend them, and I say that they are victim under, because I am an indigenous person, you know, with indigenous background. Of course I understand them. Of course, I understand the colonialization, you know. So that's why, but unfortunately, you know, the authorities made the Manus quite unsafe for me with the local people. They could tell them, oh, this man is playing with your reputation. And when they arrested me during the siege on November 2017, you know, they handcuffed me. And the commander, the police commander, you know, pulled my hair, and, you know, he took my sunglasses and broke it and say, you played with our reputation. But in fact, I didn't play with the reputation. They play with the reputation, you know, by themselves, by keeping people, by exiling people to that land. And by letting the Australian government to do that crime and make this, you know, so it was so difficult. And but really, honestly, most of people in Manus, they, you know, they liked me, because I was not silent, you know.
sometimes I introduce my words to them. That, you know, just look in this article, I write about your hospital, you know. Just look at this article, I write about the history of Manus. Just look at this movie, you know. Because I had to do it. I had to do advertisement for myself sometimes. Because in other side, they were not silent, you know. The government and the authorities, you know, they so that's why it was not safe for me. Anytime they could, and you know, during the stories about Paladin, you know, there was a very some of the powerful people in Manus, the local people, powerful families, they were involved in this corruption. And it was so hard. I worked with the media and I tried to help them to understand this corruption. But my name, many times I said, please don't mention my name because that make me unsafe. Anytime those families could attack me, you know. It was so difficult, so difficult. And always, you know, I didn't feel safe in that place. But, you know, I think, yeah, I'm happy that I could manage all of this and now I'm in a safe place.
I think we all are. Ahmed, did this make you question your involvement with the work, the fact that it was putting Behrouz in danger?
When I first met Behrouz, it was not very long after he started publishing using his real name. Before that, he was using a pen name, and other times journalists were referring to him as an unnamed source. So when I met him and we started talking, he realized at that point, it was maybe 2 years into his incarceration, he realized that whether people know him or not, it's not going to make any difference. He's still going to be harassed. He's still going to be subject to the same kinds of oppression. The systematic torture continues regardless of whether people are aware of what he's doing. And in fact, in a really perverse way. I think the system, especially the exile policy and the culture around deterrence in Australia, exploits Behrouz's work because it sends the message that this is how we treat people who seek asylum. So Behrouz was very, very aware from when I met him that it makes no difference whether he is outspoken or not. He's still subject to the same kinds of domination and oppression.
It's amazing that you say that the in some ways, like the exploitation of his work, it's almost like free advertising for the government. Is that what you're suggesting? With him writing about the awful conditions is almost what the government might want because it acts as a further deterrent?
In their own twisted logic, they think that this is actually buying into their propaganda, into their kind of the message they want to send to the world. Of course, the reality is very different. People who need to escape, they escape. People who need to seek protection, find it wherever they can. So it doesn't work in terms of a deterrence. But in the twisted, racist, colonial logic of the Australian government, they think that, yeah, this is exactly what we want to send to the world.
So me and Ahmed... Go, please.
Yeah, let me say something about this. You know, we should think about this, that the Australian government is not going to send a message to the smugglers and to people, you know, in war zone, in Middle East and other countries. It is the biggest lie in the history of Australia. And unfortunately, most of people already accepted this, you know. The reason the government keep people in Manus Island and Nauru is because of political benefits. Mm. They send this message to Australian public. Exactly. Not to the smugglers, you know. And the second reason is because of corruption. They spend $9 billion on this policy, you know. $9 billion. It's so, really, if I was an Australian citizen, you know, I would go to front of the parliament and do hunger strike there. Because of this $9 billion, you know, how did you waste this money? For what? Where is this money? You know, where is this money? $9 billion, you know, And this money, where is this money? I know where is this money. This money is in the pocket of IHMS company and other companies in Manus Island, you know? And I am sure one day Australian people will know and will hear about this. And on that time, it will be a big shock to everyone. $9 billion is a huge money. You know, it's a huge thing. You know, and another reason is ideological reason. You know, that someone like Peter Dutton, he became the most powerful minister in the history of Australia. You know, if you put yourself in his position, you said, oh, I became the most powerful minister. Why should I let these people go? So it's better I continue. It's good for me, you know, as a politician. And the politicians always, we should never forget this, just care about power, nothing else. They don't care about Australia or public, you know. They put Labour in defensive position for years. And now Labour is just, it's not a real opposition, you know. They just are defending in defensive position in other thing, you know, in economy, in environment, in everything, you know. So that's why they keep people there and continue to this policy. It's not related to the boats. The boats, they send them back. They send the boats back to Indonesia and Sri Lanka, and they have agreement with those governments. So it's not about this, you know. And you know, they exile us to remote places. For years, they didn't let the journalists to have access to those places. They have deported many people from Manus Island. They didn't even, you know, Omid. They deported Omid, you know. I remember in one day, they deported Omid, another person, a comedian, Australian comedian. Then next day, they deported an advocate. You know, the... Of course, you know, they don't want, and you know, if you look at all of these works that I did and others, you know, all of people who have worked in this field, you know, for years, you know, like yourself, like Mark, you know, that you speak out, you share this story, you criticize the system, and you know, and other people, you know, the journalists such as, you know, Ben Doherty, others, the Helen Davidson, you know, Natalie White, you know, all of these people who work in this field, you know, you really, in fact, you expose this system. And now many people around the world are aware of this. And, you know, it's not a sending message to a smuggler. It is a big lie, you know. They just care about money. They care about $9 billion. $9 billion. So I think people should think about this.
Yeah, I wrote in an essay one time that they decry the people smugglers as traitors in human misery, while they create an offshore detention center and an onshore detention center business, which is profit. There's certain people are profiting billions of dollars at the same time. So, who are the real traitors in human misery? Now, I think this would be a really good time to just ask you. I want to get, considering this is a literary festival, really get in depth on the writing and how you guys created this book. So could you just tell us how did you meet Beirus? How did you guys come to this friendship? I heard about it before, so it's a beautiful story.
Well, I met Beirus right at the beginning of 2016. And as I mentioned before, he just started publishing with his real name. And Munis Mansoubi, his first translator, translated an article for The Guardian. I think it was his first article in The Guardian. And I came across this because I've been working in this field, in this area, for quite some time, since the Howard era, actually. And so I'm in touch with a lot of these networks. And I was surprised when I saw this article and I read it. I thought, first of all, why don't I know about this person, since I'm so well connected with all of these different campaigns and movements? And why isn't this person a central part of the discourse? Why isn't he a prominent figure, more better recognized? And why isn't he basically being promoted as the one of the main spokespeople from within the prison especially. So I thought, you know, I could tell that there were multiple layers behind his writing. I could tell there was a literary dimension, a political dimension, a philosophical dimension, and also a really keen and interesting cultural dimension as well. So I thought I have to get in touch with this person and let them know that what an impact his work has had on me. And we started a slow relationship, and here we are.
What was it like for you, Behrouz, with Ahmed?
Yeah, I think sometimes I say that if I knew English as much as I know Farsi and Kurdish, it was different, you know. It was so important for me to publish my works. And, you know, I did this with Munes, with many others, then with Omid. I think Omid was the right person because he, you know, first because of the friendship, we shared our ideas, political ideas and philosophical ideas, and we get to know each other well. And I think that is very important in translation. Another thing is that he was, you know, familiar with this field, and he worked on this field for years. So he knew how this system works, and, you know, he was an expertise person in this field. And also for his background, you know, he was a part of the Baha'i minority, which is a group of people in Iran, a minority. So it was important because, you know, I am minority in everything, you know. And it was important. And also he is with quite a background indigenous culture. So that's why I think he was the right person, you know, and he was a well-educated person. And that's why I think we were work together in the right way, and we could, you know, share ideas and, you know, understand each other. And now, you know, still we work together, and, you know, I really don't call Omid as a translator. Always I call him as a colleague, you know, first as a friend, second as a colleague, because we publish some articles in academic journals too, and still we work together in this field. And I'm happy, and I think people forget about Omid, always say that, oh, Behrouz did, but, you know, in fact, you know, Omid, you know, if Omid was not exist, you know, I think we couldn't be here now, or it took a long time. Yeah, perhaps now I have my book in Farsi, but still didn't, you know, publish it. So
I just wanted to say thank you to you, Behrouz. I think we're a really strong philosophical team. So I think your vision, your activism, and your passion has made a massive impact on me. I think in many ways, I've benefited more from this interaction than you have. What's really important is that in this relationship, there's no victim-savior binary, no supporter-receiver, no benefactor-beneficiary. You know, it completely disrupts all of those kinds of oppositions that are tied up with a lot of the refugee activism. This is a completely different situation, and it opens up possibilities for what kind of activism can, what shape activism can take in the future.
How is it different? I'm not suggesting that you are trying to be his savior, but how have you made that relationship not that kind of, and how that people can fall into that kind of relationship?
Well, I think a number of things. First of all, that everything that I've done in terms of translation, in terms of connecting Behrouz with people, in terms of representing Behrouz in different spaces, I've always done after a lot of consultation and a lot of sharing with him initially. So we talk a lot about how we present his work, what kind of terminology we use, who we end up centering in terms of our critiques, what should be mentioned in different spaces. So this kind of like strategy, a long-term strategy, comes from a lot of discussion, comes out of a lot of research and a lot of deep analysis. So the other thing is that I really appreciate and I investigate Behrouz's Kurdish heritage, his political training, his experiences before he left Iran. So you know, even his family networks and you know his interest in literature. So Behrouz was even telling me, Omid, you should be reading Kafka, you should be reading Beckett, you should be reading these Kurdish authors while I was translating. So in many ways, Behrouz was also a mentor for me while I was working with him.
And that must have been really fun for you, Behrouz, because as a writer myself, you kind of get stuck in your own head when you're doing your own work, and you can spend hours at a computer by yourself. But to be able to like bounce your ideas off someone with a like mind and you know, I'm going to say equally as intelligent. That way, I don't insult either of you. But to be able to bounce those ideas off each other must have made it like a really enjoyable experience as well, I imagine.
میگه که خیلی حتما لذت بردی از این ارتباط با امید که تونستی فرصت پیش اومد که تونستی ایدهات با مثلا علاقت با برنامه ها تو با یکی صحبت بکنی باشون در ارتباط بذاری.
Yeah, I think of course, and you know, for me, I didn't have access to book in Manus, so now I'm not only behind technology. You know, yesterday I went outside with a friend, and you know, she was going to pay for park. She parked her car, and she wanted to pay. And said, "What is this?" She said, "We do it this." And how do you did this? She said, "Yeah, when you do this, you know, stop the car here. You should, you know, enter this code and." And they said, how do they know that your car is here? And she said, they check it on the street. You know, I'm not only behind the technology. Actually, I am behind many things, you know. And one of the things is that it was important for me to keep, in touch with people, you know, such as Omid. And it's not only Omid, you know, some... You know, always a small team of people like, you know, Omid, Hoda Afshar, you know, Janet, Galbraith, you know, even my friend in Iran, Najmuddin Vaisi, you know, some people always I share my ideas with them. And, you know, just to understand this system. And I think this kind of conversation and dialogues are very important with Arnold Zabel. You know, it's very important because for me that I didn't have time and also, you know, I didn't have access to book, you know, it was so hard. It was so hard. So this kind of relation and, you know, conversation and dialogue was very useful for me and very important. So... Yeah, so I'm just one thing about the first thing that you said about the, you know, victim, you know. If you look at all of my works, I never try to victimize people, you know, in Manus and not because already we are victim under this policy, but we should don't reduce people to, you know, and, you know, keep, take their identity, their dignity. And for that, if you look at my works, the refugees in these wars are not angels, you know. And always I challenge the perspective of the human rights defenders and the humanitarian organizations that they have a romantic perspective towards the refugees. And, you know, they say that, oh, you know, they introduce them as an angel. We are not angel, you know. In the book, you can see that, you know, there are some bad characters, you know, and good characters. You know, they, like us, no one is perfect. So in the book, in the movie, everywhere, you can see that these people, these refugees are around me. They, you know, they can be good and they can be bad, like me and like you and like anyone in this world. And, you know, they are not terrorists. They are not rapists. They are not criminals. They are not angels. They are people, same as, you know. So that's why, and, you know, when you just introduce people and, you know, and say they are victim, just you get sympathy, and that doesn't work, you know. And there is like a balance of power that the white people or people of Australia or other countries that, you know, they feel power in front of these people in Manus and Nauru, you know, when you want to get sympathy, you know. Sympathy doesn't work. You cannot create change, you know. The important thing is that people recognize and then understand it, you know, understand that you cannot torture people, you know. You cannot justify this. And these people have rights and they should be free, you know, and you respect their rights. Just that, you know. I never try to show people as a victim. And I think one of the biggest example is that article that I wrote about Mehdi Sawari. Mehdi Sawari was a short man with 1 meter and 10 centimeter. A short man, he was in Manus. You know, I wrote an article about him, and I describe him as a strong man, an artist. And yeah, you know, I keep his dignity in this article. I didn't try to say, oh, this man is short man, he has problem, you know, you should help him. You know, I didn't describe him like this, in this way. I describe him as a strong man, as a man who passed an ocean, as a man who is a progressive, with progressive ideas. That's why he left a religious dictatorship system in Iran, you know, a modern person, a person who has some idea and has many things to contribute to the community, you know. So all of these works are like this. I wrote them in this way. I never try to get sympathy from people because that doesn't make change, you know. For decades, people are doing this, but still, you know, they treating refugees in this way and others.
I think what's important for me, and I think one of Behrouz's greatest achievements in all of his writing and all of his artistic production, is that he's been able to show the world that the people on Manus Island, Nauru, in all forms of detention in Australia, are human, they're individuals, they have names, they're resistors, they're intellectuals, they're creatives, and they have something really unique to contribute to the world, just because of the fact that they exist and they're individuals. So I think especially the book shows that really special quality about the human beings. It gives them a face. It removes them from just being a number.
And I think that shines through in the book. It definitely shined through when I read it. On that note of the kind of savior in this kind of bipolar idea of refugees as either being these people we have to be scared of, these people we have to put on pedestals. Are you scared yourself, Behrouz, of being idolized too greatly and being put up as this perfect figure who's just destined to fall?
Yeah, I think I am actually not happy with like a kind of celebrity culture. You know, there is this culture, and I think it is the... امید ببخش کمک هم میکنی با این کلمه این این فرهنگ قالب دنیا شده الان فرهنگ اصلی دنیا این سلبریتی تو همه چی
سلبریتی کلچر هاز بیکام دیپلی اینگرایند از ا کلچرال فنومنن ورلد واید dominant, yeah.
Yeah, in everything, in any fields, you know? So it's hard. You know, you should struggle against this and, you know, or challenge this culture. And, you know, I am like others, you know? And, you know, anything that we achieve, really, anything that we achieve is because of our resistance, you know, because of, you know, everyone in Manus and Naro, you know, and many people who share their stories and, you know, for our resistance, you know, we did hunger strike, we did protest, we resisted front of this system and, you know, that's why, you know, this works. And some people say that, oh, you know, in Canada we had an event. People say that we, you know, congratulations, you closed Manus. I said, I didn't close Manus, you know. I didn't close Manus. You know, it is all our resistance. And I really believe in that. And that's why. But, you know, for me, if I have a platform, I know myself, I use it for, you know, supporting the minorities in the society. And I think that is important. But of course, you know, no one is perfect in this world. And, you know, just, but, you know, I think sometimes I think about it, it's really, this story is very remarkable. We should accept that, you know, amaze myself when I look at it, you know, a long journey and a long struggle. Yeah, honestly, I think it is remarkable. And, you know, sometimes actually this story, I mean, the whole story challenged the system and challenged many things. Just we should think about it. You know, always I say that just imagine a big island, which is Australia, and a very tiny island in the middle of the biggest ocean in the world, you know. So they exile this man to that remote prison, that remote island, and put them through, you know, a systematic torture. And torture them, to destroy them. But after 6 years, you know, you can see that how that tiny island challenged the big island. And now, if you look at this way, you know, the Australian government, you know, for years and years, they named us as a terrorist, you know, criminals, rapists, you know, very negative. They put us alongside negative concepts. But now, after 6 years, you can see that the only criminal in this story is Australian government. The Australian government is terrorist. Peter Dutton, you know, he called us illiterate people. And now I think I am in this position to strongly and, you know, say that, you know, take on the Twitter and say, Peter Dutton, you are illiterate. And I think people accept me, you know, because I wrote a book, you know, and he didn't finish his education in the university, you know, really. You know, I mean, you know, after 6 years, if you look at this story, the whole story, you know, many refugees already showed that they are, you know, really, they are able to be useful for the society, and they are with the new ideas, with the progressive ideas, you know, and is the actually challenge the picture that created by the Australian government, you know. We, and I think, sorry, I talk a lot, just I should mention this. In 2 years ago, during siege, you know, at that time when we refused to go to other places, you know, on that time, we, for the first time, we took control on the prison and we established a really progressive democratic system in the camp for 23 days. And we were completely peaceful, very peaceful and democratic. But in other side, the Australian government was aggressive and they produced violence and they beat people. And, you know, just put these two pictures in front of each other, you know. And that's why I say that we educated Australia. We educated Australia. And, you know, I think just people just should do research and read about the refugees, individual people in Manus. You know, there are many musicians, many peaceful people, many, you know, beautiful people in that island, you know. So the whole picture, I think we challenged this, yeah. And, you know, I'm proud of this. And not because of me, I am only one person, you know. All of the men in Manus Island and, you know, in Nauru, you know, our resistance, we were peaceful and democratic in front of this system.
I would love to ask so many more questions, Beirus, but we are running very out of time. And we were talking so much before, we haven't had a chance to explore. But we've got 5 minutes left, so I thought I'd just ask you one or two more questions. I also just want to say, we didn't get into this as much as I would have liked to, but Ahmed's not actually even trained as a translator. You kind of fell into this, which makes it even more amazing what you did, and I just want to commend you in front of these guys for what a wonderful job you did, so thank you. Beirus, there's a couple of things I just wanted to say. It's amazing to me that in spite of all this horror, you've become an Australian icon and you've done it through literature, which is one of the most powerful things I think, I can think of because I'm a writer. But on top of that, you've managed to make it out, and I wanted to ask you a few questions. What were you escaping from? What is the current situation in Papua New Guinea for the men that are still left there? And also, it's a double question because I'm just worried that I might have to cut this off at the end of your response, but were you aware of the kind of response that happened in Australia when you made it out? It was, for us, it was so surprising. And I'm sure you've seen Christina Keneally's lovely tweet. That was very nice of her. And Peter Dutton's warm welcome to say that you will never be allowed in Australia. But I mean, from the people, I can speak for myself saying, it brought me to tears to hear that you were out. And everyone I spoke to for the past week has been coming up to me saying, isn't it just amazing that he got out? How did he do it? So if you can talk about what you were escaping from, how you got out there, give us the real details in the next 5 minutes. Were you involved, Ahmed? Because why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, thank you. Really, you know, let me tell you something about the current situation in Manus, in Port Moresby. So no one exists in, you know, remain in Manus. They transfer everyone to Port Moresby. Right now, 240 people or 250 people remain in Port Moresby. But unfortunately, about 42 people are in Bomana prison, which is, you know, they are really living in a very harsh condition. I think 100 people will go to America in 6 months or 7 months. You know, finally they will go because I think 60 people already accepted by America and 40 people are waiting, and we expect that most of them accept. Just, you know, right now people there are facing two things. First is that it's not safe. It's very unsafe place for people. And another thing, people are living in poverty, because it's city and it's expensive, so people don't have job, you know, how they survive. And that's why, you know, people locked up in their rooms in Port Moresby. And I don't know how we can help them, but hopefully those 100 people go to America, and others, hopefully, if they don't change the law, Medivac, hopefully most of them go to Australia. And regarding, you know, the reaction, I think I didn't have this opportunity to say thank you to everyone. Really, you know, I always say this, that, you know, we couldn't survive without the support and without Australian people. We should accept and acknowledge that the big part of the Australian society have supported us, and many people, you know, such as you and others, you know, were on the ground, you know, and they are not with the big positions, you know, they are not, because people just look at people who have positions in, you know, humanitarian, you know, organization, but in fact, many people, you know, work on the ground. And people never hear about them, but they are important people. They have supported the refugees and, you know, the men in Manus. And definitely, we couldn't survive without your support. And, you know, it's really, I should appreciate everyone. Although I think you stand up for humanity, not because of us, because of your people, because of the young generation. And because, you know, this exile policy negatively impact on Australia. And now someone like Peter Dutton, who practiced dictatorship in Manus Island and Nauru for years, now is running Australia as a campus state. You know, it is a big danger for the power, you know, political culture in Australia. It's so, so dangerous. And hopefully that people of Australia recognize this and struggle against this. It's this kind of fascism and dictatorship culture and system. But regarding the Labour Party, I think they did that statement because of lack of understanding. You know, they didn't know me well. They just, they thought that they are able to politicize this and just get some credit. But, you know, I have some principles, and my strong principle is that never forget, you know, the truth. And I always try to, even if I, you know, many times I challenge something that actually was bad for me, you know, and may, you know, many people become my enemy. But for me, what is important is that we don't let the politicians to get credit of this tragedy, you know. And even me and anyone, you know, no one has this right to reduce this tragedy and get benefit of it and, you know, politicize it or, you know, reduce this tragedy. So for me, it was important, and I think they were deserve that tweets that I did.
Okay, we're going to have to finish this up because we've got another group coming in. I want everyone to give Berus a huge cheer. Thank you for listening to Pen Voices, brought to you by Sydney Pen International. Sydney Pen supports writers who have been detained or imprisoned and voices protest against the Australian government's offshore detention regime. If you are interested in supporting our work, please become a member. Go to www.pen.org.au for more details. Remember to subscribe to this podcast to catch all our episodes. Like us on Facebook at Sydney Pen International and follow us on Twitter at PENSYDNY.